what happened to them when they left the main integration room. Every once in a while, a distant scream reverberated from somewhere else in the building, affirming Balma's darkest suspicions. As more orbs piled up at the opposite end of the room, and more humans were deposited into the integration chambers, it appeared the last remnants of human life were being destroyed in this very room. Maybe Diego was right. Maybe their only option really was to submit to the organics and follow Hoffman's path. The thought left him with a sour taste in his mouth. To submit to the organics was to serve them as slaves. Even if they proved their utility, they would never be treated as equals, nor would they be allowed to carry out their own lives, free of the shackles the organics would have on them. They would be tools, just like the spiders, grunts in the organics' conquest to destroy all species that stood in their way. Balma looked hard at one of the integrated humans staring at him. "You really believe this is the only way?" The hybrid merely gazed back, his eyes narrowed to slits and his dried lips pulled tightly shut. "All this bullshit about securing our future through the organics," Balma said. He wondered if Hoffman was blowing hot air, or if there was still a very human mind behind the crustacean mask. "You think you're protecting yourself? As soon as they find another species they like, they'll dispose of you like you're nothing but a bunch of rotten fish." The hybrid shifted slightly, but still said nothing. "Look at what you've become," Balma said, still whispering, trying for this Hail Mary. By some miracle of God, if he could just convince a couple of these people, maybe they stood a chance at escaping this place. In his mind's eye, he saw the shipyard outside. All the raw firepower there, just waiting to be tapped. "You can still make a difference. You can still hurt the organics and save these people. You don't have to be their pawn." There was a glimmer of something in the hybrid's eye. He lowered his rifle slightly, a nearly imperceptible adjustment. But Balma had been watching, and he pressed his luck. "Look, I can't imagine you all want to be the organics' slaves. You've gone through this process, and now you're going to let the organics do this to kids, too? There's got to be something left in you, some shred of humanity. You can do something about this. You don't have to be an organic stooge." "Quiet," the hybrid hissed. He stepped closer and bashed Balma in the stomach with the butt of his rifle. The air escaped Balma's lungs and hot pain lanced through his abdomen. He gasped for breath but never took his eyes off the hybrid's. When he recovered, he started again. "You son of a—" The hybrid bashed him again, this time catching his jaw. A coppery taste danced over his tongue. He spat a glob of bloody saliva that landed at the hybrid's boots. He was preparing to protest again when Diego's chamber finally hissed open. Hoffman stood above the hatch like he'd just won a marathon.
"Rise, Lieutenant, and take your first step into our future."
Crimson fluid sluiced off the spikes and plates covering Diego's new body as he pulled himself out of the chamber. His eyes were as red as the liquid, and he gasped for breath. Ropey muscles coursed up and down his elongated limbs. A pale shade of blue tinged his skin. He looked around at Sophie and Emmanuel, then Holly and Balma. Hoffman moved closer to Diego.
"Tell them, do you still feel like you?"
I think so,"
Diego said. His voice rumbled in a richer baritone than it had been before, but it sounded strikingly familiar. He flexed his muscles, and Balma watched a demonic grin spread over Diego's face.
"See," Hoffman said. "Sophie, now it's your turn. You're already halfway there with the nanobots. Lieutenant Diego survived. You will, too. And with you, Dr. Rodriguez and Dr. Brown, think about all we can accomplish together. Out of all the biospheres we left on Earth, you survived the longest, You proved yourselves capable over and over. The organics notice things like that. And I think I can make a much stronger case for our continued existence with you three on my side. So, Dr. Winston, what do you say?
Hoffman stretched out a clawed hand toward her from atop his perch next to Diego's integration chamber.
Screw you, Sophie said.
Bauma tensed, sensing a confrontation as a few of the hybrids closed in around Sophie.
I'm sorry, Dr. Winston. Perhaps you'll reconsider, Hoffman said.
The hell with that, Sophie said.
Even if you force me into that chamber, I will not work for the organics. Hoffman shrugged.
If you won't comply, I can make you see things my way. A little dip in here, and the nanobots will ensure your thoughts are in tune with our own.
He signaled to the integrated humans around Sophie.
Dr. Winston, I'll ask you one more time. You can choose to do this on your own, or we can do this for you. I'd prefer we started on good terms, because a complete neurological reprogramming is dangerous. I wouldn't want anything to compromise your intellect.
What happened to giving us the choice of freedom? Sophie asked.
You are too valuable, Hoffman said. So your choices are going to be limited.
Then my answer remains the same, Sophie said. Screw you.
Bauma stared hard at Hoffman. Now more than ever he wanted a weapon. Anything, a baseball bat even. He'd beat the carapace right off that humanoid, arrogant crab.
Then he saw Diego staring at him. He raised a single brow. And Diego winked back.
Bauma knew it was on. Diego swept Hoffman off his feet and grabbed the rifle that had been strapped around the scientist's back. He tried to aim the rifle at Hoffman, but Hoffman rolled off the platform and disappeared between the integration chambers. A few nearby spiders screeched and ran toward them. Diego was already moving, leveling gunfire into the oncoming spiders. Bauma saw his chance. The hybrid who'd been guarding him raised his rifle. Bauma started to duck. But the man twisted and began firing into the spiders.
"That's fucking right!" he yelled.
The little pep talk had apparently worked. But one of the other nearby hybrids hadn't been convinced by Bauma's pleas. The hybrid started to squeeze his trigger. Bauma went into a roll and knocked the half-man, half-alien off his feet. He snatched the rifle from the man's splayed fingers. Testing the weapon, Bauma squeezed the trigger. As he'd suspected, the rifle did nothing in a normal human's hands. It was nothing but dead weight. But in a soldier's hands, it was still a weapon. He spun on the hybrid who'd attacked him and smashed the half-human's face. The impact was met with a sickening crunch of bone. Another two strikes, and the hybrid became nothing but a mess of twitching limbs. The hybrid that had changed his allegiances managed to wrangle a few more of the integrated people to their side. It was difficult to tell which of the half-humans were on their side, but Bauma would let them sort things out on their own. He ran to Holly first. She was crouched with the children, hiding behind one of the integration chambers.
"You okay?"
he asked. "What the hell is the plan now?" she asked, holding Jamie and Owen close.
"Survive. Come on, follow me."
He led Holly between the integration chambers. The screams of spiders and hybrids cried out everywhere. Pulse fire flew in waves. Rounds lanced through several of the integration chambers. Glass fractured and broke, and integration chambers spewed out their liquid. Half-mutated people flopped out like undeveloped chicken embryos from broken eggs. The grisly sight tugged at Bauma's stomach, but he tried his best to ignore it. As they skirted through the shadows, they ran into other humans who had been waiting in line ready to be dunked into the integration chambers. Bauma picked up a woman in her 40s, long hair tied back into a ragged ponytail. He brought her to her feet, and she started running on her own. Then he helped a man who looked like he'd once been an athlete, but had since let his paunch grow wider than his pecs. One by one, he picked up the stragglers, adopting the role of a shepherd leading his flock to safety. And if he was a shepherd, these organic bastards had to be the most rabid pack of wolves he had ever had to fend off. One of the hybrids threw themselves at the group, striking out of the darkness. She wrapped her claws around the former athlete he'd just rescued and dragged the bleeding man back toward the open integration tanks.
Keep them moving toward the exit, Balma said to Holly.
What then?
We'll figure it out.
He ran from her and attacked the hybrid with the stock of his useless rifle. Over and over, he slammed it into her until her nose was a bleeding wreck. She dropped the man she'd taken and swung her rifle up to fire. Balma tried to knock the rifle out of her hand, but she parried his strike. Blow after blow, she defended against his attacks, laughing as she did so. This was like a game to her. Adrenaline tore through his already ragged blood vessels, and he drew on the last bits of strength he had trying to take her down. Chaos raged inside the room. More integration tanks spilled their cargo. The screams of humans and aliens alike rent the air. Balma struggled to catch his breath as the hybrid countered his attacks. Now she laid the pressure on him, each blow sending tremors through his bones like a baseball hitting an aluminum bat. Fresh pain came with each of those impacts, and his wounded wrist felt like it was on fire. His bones wouldn't be able to take much more. Soon they'd be fractured like all the glass shards lying around their feet. Then a flurry of pulse rounds blasted through the air from his right. They cut into the hybrid, turning her torso and face into ragged strands of singed flesh. She crumpled to the ground.
Balma!
A voice called. He twisted to see Diego running toward him, Sophie and Emmanuel trailing him. Each looked bruised and bloodied, but they could still stand and run on their own.
"What the hell was all this about?"
Balma asked, gesturing to Diego's organic armor. "I'm giving us a chance," Diego said. "The only way we're getting out of here is if there's an organic on our side. Now there is. I can control their equipment, their weapons, their ships."
The weight of Diego's words hit Balma like a pulse round to the face. He had sacrificed his humanity for the sake of the rest of the crew. Or had he?
"We need to get you to the shipyard," Emmanuel said. Another hybrid charged. Diego spun and aimed at the half-human, but the hybrid raised his hands instead.
"We're getting out of here," the hybrid said. "I'm not taking this shit anymore." "That's what I'm talking about," Balma said.
He waved the hybrid toward them. Any reinforcements were welcome now. The hybrid had almost reached them when a ground-shaking roar erupted to his right. A huge reptilian claw swiped him off his feet, and his body careened into the wall, breaking into bloody pieces. A sentinel took the place of the hybrid, bearing a mouthful of dagger-like teeth at those trying to escape. Once again, the organic rifle in Balma's hands felt horribly impotent. He could hardly do anything to prevent the carnage that was about to unfold. Diego and a bunch of unarmed humans were all that stood against one alien lizard with an anger problem. Maybe, if more of the rebelling hybrids helped, they'd be able to win this battle. Another three sentinels joined the first, backed up by a shrieking crowd of spiders with bloodlust in their compound eyes. The din of organic voices reverberated among the integration chambers. Balma gulped. Things had just gotten much, much worse. Athena lay in a cot deep within the bowels of the old sewer system beneath Pelican Air Force Base. Taylor and Malone were out on sentry duty with Staff Sergeant Theron Corey and several of the kids. She was trying to grab some shut-eye, but a conversation between Griffin and Santiago was keeping her up. Relenting to her sleeplessness, she sat up and rubbed her temples, trying to focus past a burgeoning headache. "We're dying here," Santiago said. Griffin brought a finger to his lips. "Try and keep it down. Those are kids."
"I'm well aware of that, brother," Santiago snapped. "Don't tell me what to say in front of them."
The two teachers were sitting in metal chairs, talking in hushed voices. An old-school squeaky fan blew air on the filthy children resting there. There was a tense moment of silence between Griffin and Santiago.
"My point is," Santiago began again, "what do we do now? We got more mouths to feed than we can handle now. All this talk of escape. If it's going to happen, then let's go."
Athena heaved a sigh and swung her legs over the side of the cot. She couldn't sleep anyways, not after what had happened to her crew.
"We've got to wait for Alexia," Griffin said.
"We can't rely on some old computer hundreds of miles away."
"We have to trust her," Athena said.
Santiago snorted and pulled his hair back over his head.
"Look, she said she'd send us a signal, and we haven't received squat from her. The all-powerful Alexia is toast, if you ask me."
"What?"
Athena dragged her sleeve across her sweaty forehead. God, but it was hot down here. Even hundreds of feet beneath the surface, with fans charged by solar panels, it was near 90 degrees.
"We've been waiting for contact from her, but she's gone dark," Santiago said.
Athena looked to Griffin, who confirmed the information with a melancholy nod.
"Theron helped me rig an old satellite dish in a tunnel near the surface," Santiago said. "We originally set it up, hoping to get some transmission or sign or something telling us there was still a government out there, that just maybe, God willing, someone was searching for survivors. Color me surprised when the first transmission we overheard was from Alexia. So all her communications have been a damn one-way street. We've had no way to reply, so we just listen to her give us orders like she's some kind of god. And now our precious god is dead, gone, absent, finito. Right when you all walk in here, no more Alexia."
Athena didn't respond. She was too busy thinking of the implications of living in a world without the AI. "We've got to wait," Griffin said. "She promised she'd help us." His brow furrowed. "How long will our remaining supplies last?"
"Shit, 4 or 5 days," Santiago let out a morose laugh. "A week if we're okay with growling bellies."
"Alexia," Athena muttered. "Where are you?"
"That's the million-dollar question," Santiago said.
Alexia had promised to help them right away. Athena couldn't imagine the AI would just leave them in the dark like this, especially not after they'd made it to Pelican AFB. A shiver crept down her spine. There had to be a good reason. If Alexia had gone quiet... She pictured those drones headed toward Colorado. What if something had happened to her? They had to know. "Santiago, this dish you guys found, where did you get it?" Athena asked.
"Theron and I scavenged as much junk as we could from Pelican, hoping some of it would be useful. The dish was a part of that."
"Do you have more comm equipment?" Santiago shrugged.
"Probably, but I'm just a freaking bus driver, not a scientist."
"Can you show me what else you have?" Instead of answering, Santiago stood and waved her after him. She followed. He led her to an adjoining tunnel that was filled with all manner of electronic equipment.
"Any of this useful to you?"
Santiago asked. An idea formulated in Athena's head. "Maybe, but it's not going to be up to me." She crept back to Trish's cot and gently tugged on the woman's shoulder, rousing her from her slumber. Trish opened her eyes groggily. "Sorry to wake you, but I need your help with something." Trish rubbed at her eyes and then nodded.
"Sure. What can I do?"
"Santiago hasn't heard anything from Alexia, and we're getting worried. I know this will expose us to the organics, but we have to try reaching her."
"We didn't bring anything capable of that type of communication," Trish said.
"I know, but Santiago might have something useful." Athena showed Trish the tunnel of scavenged equipment. "Think you can find something useful here?"
"Maybe."
After an hour alone with the equipment, Trish came out with an antenna system hooked up to a cracked monitor. Wires dangled off the contraption. It looked like some kind of school science experiment. Griffin raised a single eyebrow.
"Is that gonna work?"
"Should," Trish said. "It's a pretty standard radio wave transmission device. Wasn't too hard to cobble together." Her face scrunched in worry. "The only problem is this will for sure be heard by any organics listening in." "That's going to be a risk we'll have to take," Athena said. "Is Santiago okay with that?" Griffin asked. Athena looked over her shoulder. The eccentric old man was talking to the teachers. "He's nuts, but there are kids here," Griffin said.
"I know. I just don't think we have any other choice."
Athena eyed their supplies in the corner of the room.
"We are out of time, and we need Alexia."
"I'm with you, whatever you decide," Griffin said.
"You haven't led us astray yet." Athena paused to think. If their radio transmission was detected by the organics, she might be inviting a slaughter. But the alternative was to starve in a week. There was only one good option, really, and it wasn't all that good. They had to talk to Alexia.
Santiago, get over here,
Athena said. The man hurried over.
Yeah?
Trish crafted a radio transmitter from your supplies,
Athena said.
We can use it to contact Alexia.
Santiago's gaze danced between them suspiciously.
What's the catch?
It's possible the signal could be detected by the organics.
How possible?
Athena looked to Trish.
It's hard to say, Trish said. They'd have to have a ship or vehicle or something equipped with comm equipment scanning all frequencies.
Santiago looked over his shoulder at the kids. Athena could tell he really cared about them and just wanted the best for them.
We have to think of the future and not the present, Athena said. As soon as we reach Alexia, we can get the hell out of here. You said it yourself. We're not going to last down here.
Santiago sighed.
Fine, try it.
Do it, Trish,
Athena ordered.
You got it, Corporal.
Trish held out a long wire with the antenna.
This needs to be close to the surface.
Consider it done, Griffin said, taking off for the exit wire in hand. I'll tell Malone and Taylor what's going on while I'm up there.
Athena nodded.
She watched him move into a connecting tunnel. Trish set up the monitor as the antenna continued to unspool. She started tapping out a message. Folding her arms across her vest, Athena watched anxiously.
What is that?
Came a young voice. Athena looked over to see a young girl standing in the dim lighting.
Are you a soldier?
She asked. Athena didn't know exactly how to reply to that.
I guess I am. What's your name? Melanie. How old are you, Melanie?
The girl looked at the ceiling with blue eyes, pursed her lips, and then said,
5. You look older than that.
I'm almost 6.
Ah, that explains it.
Melanie pointed to Trish.
What's she doing?
Trying to get us help.
I thought you were the help.
Athena bent down next to the girl, getting a whiff of body odor and feces. The kids were all filthy. None of them had probably washed in months, and they had been living in a series of sewer tunnels to boot. The ground suddenly rumbled under her feet and her eyes flitted from Melanie to the ceiling. Dust particles rained down from the concrete. Several of the kids got up from their beds and Santiago ran over to Athena and Trish. The flames from the candles flickered, the light dancing across the walls.
The hell is going on?
Santiago asked. Another vibration rumbled across the floor.
What is that?
Trish asked, looking up from the equipment. Athena grabbed her pulse rifle and checked the magazine.
It can't be from your transmission, could it? How the hell could they be on us this fast?
It was already close by, came another voice. Griffin stood in the exit with Malone and Taylor. Several of the kid soldiers came running from the passage. There's something up there, Corporal, and it's really freaking big, Griffin said.
It's some kind of massive bug alien, Malone said. It just dropped out of the sky, and now it's headed toward the base.
Another rumble shook the room. Spider webs fissured across the ceiling. Santiago's nostrils flared.
You brought that thing here!
There's no way they detected and picked up our transmission that fast,
Athena replied, still not believing their sour luck.
You must have been detected on the way in, Santiago said. It doesn't matter now. We have to get topside.
The old man palmed a magazine into his rifle.
We have to draw whatever this thing is away from the kids. Theron, take them out the back.
The staff sergeant nodded and ran over to the kids and teachers.
Come on, everyone, he said. Grab your stuff and let's move.
The quakes continued, each one louder than the last. A chunk of ceiling fell away and shattered on the floor. The teachers and Theron were already leading the kids down another passage, their escape route. Athena, Taylor, Malone, and Griffin followed Santiago toward the tunnel Griffin had accessed earlier. Trish called out after them.
Wait, Corporal, I'm getting something from Alexia.
Athena halted. Trish listened to the receiver for several long seconds. Even in the dim lighting, Athena could see her eyes widen.
She says to hold tight, Trish said. She's sending us help.
Entry 10292. Designee AI Alexia. Lolo is currently passing over North America, providing a view of what's happening at the Pelican AFB. The same type of alien monster that killed Commander Suzuki and his team has located Athena and the others. The organics must have detected Corporal Rollins and her team crossing the desert and deployed this gargantuan beast that appears to be some sort of anthropoda. I studied the creature on screen while my system scans the image. It may be an alien, but it shows a remarkable similarity to the Dynastinae subfamily of beetle, in particular the Hercules beetle. Of course, its size is 1,000 times larger than even that massive beetle species. It scuttles over the sand on multiple limbs, folding thick wings over another set of membranous wings, the ones it used to fly there. Two horns crest the armored head, and a third horn points forward from the thorax. A moment of observation reveals the purpose of this third horn. The creature finishes folding its wings under plating covering its back and then lowers its head to start digging into the sand covering the sewer system the humans are hiding inside. The beetle is a bunker crusher, and it won't be long before it breaks into the underground passages. At Cheyenne Mountain, 7 of the alien nanotech spheres have melted their way through the doors protecting the servers and drives that serve as my brain. All but 2 of the robots I've sent to engage them lie in heaps of debris. There are only 3 doors left for the organics to break through before they reach me. My last line of defense, aside from YK-8, is J-9-1, a drone I've dispatched from outside the facility. This robot was a mile out on routine patrol when the organics landed on the tarmac, but it's now back inside the biosphere, preparing to attack the spheres melting through the final doors. This is it. I'm ready to shut down the system. The virus YK-8 that I infected the organic network with is working and has provided me an opportunity to hack into their system, but I am unable to manually shut down these nanotechnology-based spheres. They continue their mission of extermination. In this race against time, an interesting development occurs. I receive a transmission from an organic ship entering Earth's atmosphere. The pilot claims to be an alien friend of the human race and insists it is with a human now. I don't believe it. This can't be possible. This must be a trick, a way to distract me. The organics know I'm in their network, and they know I've infected them with a virus. The virus isn't designed to destroy their fleet. That, I judged, is impossible. Instead, the virus is intended to allow me to control the sharks, the only aircraft I have the schematics for, if I can do that. I may have a shot at stopping the Hercules beetle at Pelican. Commander Suzuki's sacrifice was not in vain. The intel he provided on the sharks could help me save the hundreds of humans clinging to survival. Sensors show the alien spheres breaking through the third door, leaving only 2 between my hardware and their lasers. I ignore the transmission from the shark entering the atmosphere. I won't let the organics trick me. There's only 1 hope now. If the virus gives me access to the other sharks, I will have a chance to complete my objective of saving the remaining humans. The sharks will be their vehicles to Mars or beyond. End entry.
Son of a bitch, Noble said. Alexia was clearly ignoring Roots's messages, but he didn't blame her. There was no way for her to confirm Roots was who it claimed to be. All he could do was tell Roots to fly faster. They had already pushed the fighter to the max since they'd left the moon. 3 hours was all it had taken to get to Earth, but they were slowing now as they approached the planet. Any faster and they would burn up during re-entry. Roots warned that the organic ship was reporting that such temperatures would tear the vessel apart. "Come on, buddy, you can do this," Noble said. Roots gave a cackle to confirm he got the message. His sponge-tipped branch limbs moved with precision as he piloted the fighter. They penetrated the mesosphere, and seconds later cut through the stratosphere.
"Let's go, let's go," Noble said anxiously.
The ship continued to decelerate. Flames rushed across the cockpit, vibrating the vessel, but the shields held. Noble took in a long breath, doing his best to manage his nerves. His heart continued to kick out of control, and sweat bled down his naked flesh. He watched and waited for the first view of the surface. This was the most excitement he'd had in 3 months, but it wasn't exactly good excitement. They continued on course to Cheyenne Mountain. Soon enough, the mountain range jutted up across the horizon. His muscles tightened across his body at his first glimpse of the landscape. The view wasn't exactly how he remembered it,
The airbrushed peaks were gone, replaced by jagged brown tips that looked like rotting teeth. The brown continued down to the base of the mountains, where the tree line had shriveled and died. Charred forests, burned to the ground, filled the view to the east, and craters where crystal-clear lakes had been dotted the terrain. As the aircraft closed into Cheyenne, Roots reached over and placed a sponge against his arm. A warning. A half-dozen organic fighters sat idly on the tarmac, the same type of fighter that Roots was piloting.
"No wonder Alexia isn't answering,"
Noble whispered. Roots glanced over, batting all three eyelids.
"Keep flying," Noble ordered, touching the alien.
He looked back out at the tiny blue craft parked outside the blast doors leading into the mountain. Scooting closer to the control panel, Noble prepared the laser cannons.
"Time to turn some more organics into pulp," he muttered.
Three of the alien fighters rose off the platform to intercept Noble, but he still had the element of surprise. He activated the lasers and pushed the firing button, targeting all three of the ships simultaneously. A staccato blast of laser fire lanced away from the cannons and slammed into the three craft, the pilots all caught off guard. The first volley took down the shields, and the second punched holes into each ship. Only one survived the onslaught. It pulled away, but Noble fired another round, ripping off both wings. The nose lowered, and the craft plummeted toward the slope. It exploded on impact with a cliff. Noble turned his attention to the other fighters still on the tarmac. Laser fire slammed into their shields. Explosions followed, rocking the tarmac. Wings and burned hulls flew into the air. In seconds, there wasn't anything but the smoldering wreckage of alien fighters. A single sentinel had managed to slither away from the destruction, heading for a dirt trail. Noble focused the sights on the monster and fired, pulverizing it in a spray of blue that coated the mountainside.
"Hell yes!"
he shouted. Roots let out a cackle and touched Noble with another warning. He turned to look out the back of the translucent ship and identified the drones Roots had discovered patrolling the skies. Noble targeted the smaller craft with the dorsal cannon. One by one, they shattered in a spray of blue mist. Another scan revealed the area was clear of hostiles.
"Take us down," Noble said.
He took in the scene of devastation with grim satisfaction. But Noble knew this victory would be short-lived. The organics would send reinforcements. They only had a small window of time to get inside the biosphere and find Alexia. The AI was the only one that would know where the survivors of his crew were holed up, assuming they were still alive. Smoke rose away from the tarmac as Roots put them down between bits of flaming debris. Noble touched Roots.
"Stay here, buddy, and keep the engines warm. I'll be right back."
Opening the hatch, Noble jumped out of the ship, his naked feet slapping the ground. A small shard of metal cut into his right foot, but he didn't care. He was finally back on human soil and standing on solid ground. A tear fell from his eyes as he plucked the shard from his foot, but it wasn't from pain, it was from joy. He resisted the urge to get down and kiss the earth. Instead, he ran for the blast doors, waving his arms and shouting, "Alexia, it's me! It's me, Captain Rick Noble of the Ghost of Atlantis!" He stood there waving his arms like a madman, realizing he probably looked like a crazy Neanderthal standing there naked and covered in grime. But despite his appearance, the doors creaked open to reveal the inside of a large garage. He went to step inside when laser fire spread to his right. He ducked down as Roots fired into the open space. Noble only got a glimpse of what it was firing at. The lasers obliterated small, disc-like objects and punched head-sized holes in the concrete floor. Looking over his shoulder, Noble frowned at Roots. The cannons continued moving, scanning for targets.
"Alexia!"
Noble shouted. He cautiously took a step into the open space, knowing there could still be organics inside.
"Captain Rick Noble, I presume," came a smooth feminine voice.
"That you, Alexia?" he said.
"Yes, indeed, Captain. You're just in time to help me leave Cheyenne Mountain. We have a new mission to complete."
Noble couldn't help but smile at the sound of her voice. She wasn't AI, but damn did it feel good to hear a human voice again, even if it was synthetic.
"Do you know where my crew is?"
he asked.
"I do indeed, Captain, but time is of the essence. Come inside and pull my hard drive. I'll take you to them."
Chapter 23.
Now!
Jeff yelled. He and David threw EMP grenades from their perch in the rafters. The grenades exploded between the four sentinels staring Diego and Balma down. As soon as their shields fell, Jeff and David doused them with a salvo of gunfire. The first sentinel collapsed amid broken, bloodied limbs, crushing several of the smaller spiders beneath its weight. Hordes of people screamed as the aliens descended on them, climbing over the fallen sentinel. Jeff fired at one of the other sentinels that was getting too close to Sophie and the others.
Balma! Sophie!
Both of them looked confused for a moment as they searched the rafters and catwalks. Jeff waved at them.
Holy shit!
Balma said.
Jeff! David! Here!
Jeff threw down the two extra rifles he and David had been lugging around since they'd first escaped the sunspot.
I knew those would be useful!
As soon as Balma caught his, he started firing into the mass of aliens. Sophie handed her rifle off to Emmanuel. Jeff was happy to see her alive, but he noticed she seemed paler than usual and wasn't moving as fast as the others. Diego was now one of the humanoid aliens, but now things at least made sense to Jeff. He'd overheard everything Hoffman had told the others. It had looked so painful and disgusting. He'd hated having to watch it, but what else was he supposed to do? He and David had bided their time until the right moment.
I think Dad would be pretty proud,
Jeff thought. He took out another spider trying to attack one of the helpless humans. David ended another.
Good job, bud,
Jeff said. He thought they were only going to be saving Sophie and the others, but now they were helping a bunch more people than he'd ever thought possible.
You too,
David said.
Boys, you gotta get down here,
Balma yelled.
Hurry!
Jeff threw his rifle over his back.
Come on, bud, you heard him.
Together they scrambled down the scaffolding to the ground. The screams of the aliens still filled the air between the scorch of gunfire. A few of the humanoids seemed to have joined the human forces and were fighting off their former comrades. Spiders reared back, trying to stab at the fleeing humans. Many of the chambers were still filled with people swinging their arms and legs around, trying to free themselves from their prisons.
"Boys, keep moving!"
Balma roared.
"What about them?"
David asked, pointing to the people in the integration chambers.
"Don't we need to help them?"
Jeff's stomach flipped.
"I don't think we can save them."
A spider charged into the throng of escaping humans. The alien ripped into the first few humans in its path, tearing them into chunks of meat and bone in a red flurry. Jeff fired on the alien, and it crumpled, sliding headlong into an integration chamber. The alien was dead, but the damage was already done. People scattered around the broken monster. Their faces showed pure terror. Diego and Balma were losing control of the crowd. More sentinels clambered into the space. They pushed between the integration chambers and the corpses of humans and aliens in pursuit of their prey. Jeff's heart pounded faster than light speed. The cacophony of the aliens and the exchange of gunfire crashed against his eardrums. His eyes sought to make sense of the rush of colors flashing from the broken integration chambers and the bleeding aliens and dying people. The odor of death and burned flesh stung his nostrils. A voice at the back of his mind screamed in terror, telling him everything was screwed, that he really would be seeing Dad soon. They couldn't make it out of this madness. But the look on David's face said otherwise. His younger brother's expression was set in grim determination, focused on the path before them. Only a few spiders stood between them and the airlock to outdoors. They were cut down in a matter of seconds. But the real danger wasn't the aliens. Even Jeff knew that. While the terraforming efforts had been underway, barely any oxygen was to be found in the thin Martian atmosphere. People began to fight over the few available EVA suits that had been abandoned by the organics human prisoners.
"Come on, people!"
Balma yelled.
"Get it together!"
Sophie tried to pull two people off each other.
"Stop!"
One of them backhanded her, and she fell into Emmanuel's waiting arms. Diego bounded toward them and ripped the two people off each other.
"We do not have time for our own civil war!"
His booming voice seemed to settle them through sheer force of fright. "We will have to make do!" He took the suit and gave it to Owen. After securing another suit for Jamie, Diego pushed his way through the swarm of people. Balma helped Holly and the kids along behind Diego. Jeff raced to catch up with them, David by his side. "Before all hell breaks loose out there," Balma said, "what's the plan?"
"Get me to one of those ships and I'll get us out of here,"
Diego said.
"First ship we see?" Balma asked.
"First one big enough to fit all these people."
"No,"
Sophie said.
No, that won't work. We've got to make sure people can actually live on the ship. Very few of them can support human life.
Then what do we do? Emmanuel asked.
We have to take one of the zoo ships, Sophie said.
Are you sure that'll work? Velma asked.
I am, Sophie said. I've been on one. Long story, but you're going to have to trust me.
Do you?
I do,
Jeff said. David straightened, still holding his rifle at the ready.
I do, too.
Hey, Diego said. Hoffman said those zoo ships could transport people, so I'm with you, Sophie. A spider shrieked as it crawled over one of the integration chambers. The people huddled around the airlock screamed and cowered. Diego fired at the alien's face, decapitating it with pulse rounds.
We need to move now, he said. Tell these people they've got to hold their breath for a few seconds. That's the best we can do.
Into the airlock,
Sophie yelled.
Everyone, now!
She waved all the surviving people into the airlock, cramming them in. The rest of the crew did what they could to hold off the advance of the organics. The people clamored, and one frightened man rushed Jeff, nearly knocking him off his feet. David yanked him up. The aliens were drawing closer, and the half-humans that had banded together seemed mostly defeated now. There was very little between Jeff, David, and the encroaching organics. If the aliens didn't kill them all, Jeff wondered if he'd be turned into a half-human, enduring that painful transition and forced to live as a slave to the organics. He couldn't imagine being forced into servitude like the spiders, dying on some alien planet just to fulfill their master's thirst for water. Jeff's breath came and went in shallow gasps. He wanted to throw down his rifle and run, follow the mass of people into the airlock. His whole world turned into a violent rush of sound and color. Dizziness started to take him.
Jeff, we're going to make it, right?
David looked up at him. His bottom lip trembled behind his suit's visor and his face had drained of color. All of a sudden, the panic threatening to strangle Jeff's mind released.
We're going to make it, bud. We're going to save these people and get off this planet.
We're ready,
Sophie shouted over the crowd. She was positioned on the far side of the airlock. She had an EVA suit on.
Here we go, boys, Balma said, ushering Jeff and David into the airlock next to Holly and the other children.
Diego and Emmanuel came last. The hatch to the airlock slammed shut. Sophie initiated the atmosphere transition procedure. Air hissed out of the airlock. A few people screamed, and others whimpered. Jeff guessed there were nearly 30 people in here besides the crew he'd arrived on Mars with. It looked like they'd found some colonists after all. Something slammed against the hatch. The airlock shook, and a hose overhead came loose. It whipped around like an angry cobra trying to strike. The hatch shook again, and the frustrated bellows of a sentinel echoed through. More people screamed, pressing towards Sophie in the opposite end of the airlock. Some wore the suits they'd gathered. Others looked like they were already struggling to hold their breath. Finally, the hatch out to the shipyards started to open.
People began pushing themselves through before it had even finished.
"Stick together!"
Emmanuel yelled, struggling to be heard above the clamor of the crowd. Jeff saw his attempts were nearly futile as he tried to shepherd these people together. Panic drove people out of the half-opened hatch. The interior hatch trembled again, denting inward. Jeff raised his rifle, backing up slowly from the hatch. It shook again, and the metal groaned. Rivets and wires broke free. Then the door gave way completely. Air rushed through in a violent wind, pushing Jeff and David over each other and against a wall. A sentinel trounced in, impaling the nearest human with its claws and dragging the body across the deck. Jeff tried to find the last remnants of his courage as the rest of the aliens entered the airlock, but the shrieks of the invading horde made that nearly impossible. David looked up at him, hoisting his rifle, ready to fight. The odds were stacked against them in that small place. All Jeff could do was shake his head and yell,
"Run!"
Sophie climbed out of the airlock. People started scattering in different directions. Some grasped at their throats, unprepared for the thin atmosphere. Desperation took them, despite Sophie's pleas for them to follow her.
"Where to?"
Emmanuel asked, striding beside her as they moved through the shipyard. They passed under a black ship nearly the size of the Sunspot. Most of the people still followed them. A blaze of pulse fire ripped from Diego, Balma, and the boys at the rear of the group. A sentinel was now leading the spiders out of the airlock and between the ships. She searched her mind for the zoo ship she'd seen in her visions.
Ahead of them was a beetle-shaped ship that towered above the rest. Gun barrels poked up along its side around massive, bulbous enclosures. "That's it," she said, pointing. "We've got to get everyone in there." The entrance to the zoo ship was no more than a couple hundred meters away, but it may as well have been another 50 kilometers away with the crowd of human refugees in disarray. A shock of pain tore through Sophie's head. She doubled over and started panting. People streamed around her, heading in the direction she'd pointed.
"Sophie!"
Emmanuel called. He pushed against the tide of racing people to get to her. Her vision flashed red, and a sudden urge to strangle Emmanuel took hold. A voice in her mind told her to stay where she was, to tell all those people to surrender, that their plight was futile, their minds corrupted by traitors. She eyed the rifle in Emmanuel's hands hungrily. With it, she could end this crazy attempt to escape. All those humans running from their future, running from the inevitable, they were afraid of becoming great, of becoming part of the organics. They didn't deserve to be part of this new world.
"Are you okay?" Emmanuel asked. "What happened?"
He placed a hand on her shoulder. Even through their suits, his touch scorched through her like a pulse round to her heart. A sudden, violent fury raged in her head and her fingers twitched, yearning to strangle him and take his rifle. The nanobots.
"No,"
Sophie thought. "You will not win. You will not win." She doubled over in pain again, and Emmanuel held her tight. The OCT dropped from her pack. She didn't bother picking it up. She already knew, if she used it later, what she would see.
"You've got to go," she said,
jaw clenched. She worked past the agony, her teeth grinding together.
"Get Diego to open the ship to these people."
"No, Sophie," Emmanuel said. "You're coming too." He threw an arm under her shoulder and lifted her. Hot pain erupted from her like a solar flare. The nanobots wanted her to turn around. Every step closer to the zoo ship made them attack her at a cellular level. They had been allowed to rejuvenate, and they would destroy her if she left Hoffman's mad laboratory of half-human aliens for good. But she would never go back there. No matter how awful the pain became or how loud the voices in her head screamed, a darkness crept into her consciousness, threatening to make her pass out. She knew that as soon as she did, this would all be over.
"These people need you,"
Sophie said. She was vaguely aware of the bodies moving past her and the far-away sounding chorus of aliens chasing them. It took every bit of willpower she had left to focus on Emmanuel.
"You can save them. Take them somewhere to start over."
"No way in hell am I doing that without you, Sophie. We're not going through this again." Emmanuel continued pushing forward, supporting her every step of the way. Her strength was sapped. Emmanuel was risking his life by staying back here with her. Diego and Balma were catching up to them. Holly was rushing ahead with the children while Jeff and David provided cover fire.
"Diego,"
Sophie managed, her voice now coming out ragged,
"you've got to get everyone into that ship. You're the only one that can get this thing started."
The hybrid nodded at her.
"Consider it done, Doctor."
He bounded ahead, surging past the crowd of people and toward the hatch into the zoo ship. A slight wave of relief washed through Sophie when she saw him tap on the hatch controls, and it actually opened. People flooded in.
"We're actually doing it, Sophie," Emmanuel said. "We're getting off this rock, and we're taking these people with us."
Balma limped along beside them. Somewhere between the initial rebellion and now, he had evidently twisted his ankle. Still, he fired back at the aliens, covering the last of the humans rushing toward the zoo ship.
"We're almost there,"
Balma said. Sophie watched a small smile cross his face briefly when Holly and the children loaded into the ship.
"Just a little farther."
A sudden blast of plasma exploded to their right. Emmanuel and Sophie were thrown off their feet. Clods of dirt and rock pelted Sophie's suit. From across the shipyard, A few slingers were bombarding them with plasma bombs, the bombs slamming around them indiscriminately. Shrapnel cut through the air and ricocheted off other ships.
"They must know what we're trying to do," Emmanuel said. "They're desperate to stop us."
The last of the escaped humans that were not part of their crew made it aboard the zoo ship. Plasma rounds exploded around the shipyard, geysers of debris erupting everywhere the rounds hit. Despite the blasts, the other sentinels and spiders still coursed over the landscape.
"Of course they are," Sophie said. "Like Hoffman said, those zoo ships contain all the technology they've taken from other races. These ships drive the organics' success. We take one of those. We take the keys to the organics' kingdom."
"Then I'm glad we're about to steal one of them," Emmanuel said.
He reached for the open hatch. Balma provided covering fire as he stood in the entrance. The fires in Sophie's brain and muscles burned hotter than before. She felt ready to collapse. If not for Emmanuel, she would already be lying on the ground, writhing and waiting for one of the plasma blasts to hit her and end her misery. She wanted to feel joy, knowing they would soon escape. Soon they would be off this planet and away from this miserable excuse for a colony. But all she could feel was seething anger and agony. The nanobots weren't letting go.
"Just one more step, Sophie," Emmanuel said, helping her up.
Her boot hit the first step, and Emmanuel started to hoist her the rest of the way. As soon as she pushed herself up toward the hatchway, something huge slammed into her chest and tossed her backward. Emmanuel rolled beside her. He dropped the R-vamp and his rifle. Red soil covered Sophie's visor, and she struggled to catch her breath. Each intake of air caused a sharp pain to stab through her chest. Emmanuel scrambled for his rifle, but something kicked it away.
Sophie looked up. Hoffman.
"Stop being so stubborn," he said.
He grabbed Emmanuel's rifle. When Balma tried to fire on him from the entrance to the ship, Hoffman let loose a flurry of rounds, forcing Balma back. Hoffman slung his rifle onto his back, then grabbed Emmanuel and Sophie by their suit collars. He dragged them away so Balma couldn't fire on them. Another plasma blast exploded nearby. Rock and dirt showered them. Hoffman didn't flinch. Emmanuel tried to twist out of Hoffman's grip, but Hoffman kicked him in the chest, sending him flying backwards.
"We can use you here," Hoffman said. "If you leave, the organics will hunt you down."
He paused and fired back at the zoo ship's entrance again, holding any would-be saviors back.
"And even if you do get off this planet, they will continue to exert their influence on you."
Emmanuel tried to pick himself up and charge Hoffman. Another swipe of Hoffman's claws sent the man tumbling away again with a cry of pain.
"Emmanuel!"
Sophie cried, trying to crawl over to him. The pain was unbearable. She felt as if a slinger was sitting atop her.
"Stop this, Hoffman. You want to save humanity? Come with us. Don't fall for the organics trap."
"You don't understand," Hoffman said.
Emmanuel pushed himself up to his knees. Hoffman kicked him in the abdomen, and the man sprawled out on his stomach, gasping for breath behind his foggy visor. Sophie tried to reach up toward Hoffman, tried to grab his arm and stop him, but the nanobots urged her not to. Every movement she wanted to make felt like she was swimming through a pool of lead.
"They can control you from here, Sophie," Hoffman continued.
He pressed a foot on her shoulder to prevent her from crawling any farther.
"This colony will always control you. You and any other human infected by the bots. They own you."
The bots pressed on her mind. Her vision swam, and she blinked, desperate not to succumb to the encroaching darkness.
"You're already more like me, more like the organics than you realize."
Hoffman once more extended his clawed fingers.
"Stop all of this and come back with me. We can make this right."
The fiery tornado of the bots swirled in her mind, and agony swelled until she was short of breath.
"You will not win. You will not win,"
she repeated the mantra. Over and over she let those words flow through her mind until they were all she could think. Like a whirlwind, they blew back the fires of the bots. "I am still human," she said. "I am not like you. I never will be." With all the remaining strength she could muster, she dove for the rifle Hoffman had kicked aside. Every joint in her body protested the movement, and she cried out in nearly unbearable agony. But she wouldn't let the bots win. She wouldn't let Hoffman win.
Sophie grabbed the rifle, twisted, and fired on Hoffman. The shots blazed into his shoulder and chest, punching through armor and tearing into his flesh. His feet slipped, knocking him off balance. She caught his gaze.
His eyes were wide with surprise and, Sophie thought, fear. Now that was the most human emotion she'd seen on him since he introduced her to the biosphere under Cheyenne Mountain. There was still a hint of the former man and scientist there, no matter how deeply the organics had perverted his mind. "You don't have to do this," Sophie said to him. "You can come with us. Drop your rifle." She pushed herself up to her knees, then stood, shakily. Now she offered her hand to him. For a moment, she thought he might actually take it. His injuries might have finally broken through the fog on his mind, the delusion that the only way to survive was to give up that which made him human. Free will, and the desire to pursue an unfettered life. Slingers still lobbed volley after volley. The spiders were crawling over the other ships now. The roar of ships' engines rolled across the shipyard, and several other ships started to initiate, ready to intercept the stolen one if it dared take off.
"Please, Dr. Hoffman," Sophie said. "We can save humanity together."
The fear in Hoffman's eyes disappeared, to be replaced by red-hot anger. He pushed himself up and started toward Sophie, marching forward in a blind rage. Emmanuel dove and grabbed Hoffman's leg. Hoffman twisted and sent his claws through Emmanuel's back. Emmanuel yelled in agony, and Sophie let loose a salvo into Hoffman's chest. More gunfire blasted from the zoo ship's hatch. Hoffman went down in a tangle of busted armor and bleeding flesh. His limbs went still, and his rifle fell from his grip. Sophie collapsed and began crawling toward Emmanuel. Blood started to bubble through the punctures in his suit.
"No, no, no," she wept.
Bauma limped out of the zoo's ship, his rifle over his back. Another plasma round hit near enough that a wave of heat and tossed-up Martian soil washed over them. Bauma grabbed Emmanuel. Sophie fought against the pain coursing through her and stood, wrapping Emmanuel's other arm around her shoulder. The nanobots fought to control her mind. The sounds around her ebbed and flowed. She could sense her vision growing hazy. But she carried on. For Holly and the children. For Diego and Bauma. For Emmanuel. For humanity. She felt another person hold her upright and let her weight fall on them.
"You're going to be okay," Holly said. "We've got you, Sophie. We're getting out of here."
Sophie knew she would be okay. She'd figure out a way, somehow, on this damn ship, to conquer the nanobots within her. But it wasn't herself she was worried about. Emmanuel was in Bauma's arms, unconscious. She reached out and stroked his arm. Then she repeated the promise he'd made to her so long ago.
"We're getting out of here, Emmanuel. I'm not leaving without you."
Chapter 24.
Athena aimed her pulse rifle at the building-sized beetle chiseling at the ground with horns the size of a school bus. It had flown here to kill them, and it was her fault. The organics must have detected her team moving across the desert after all. Her gut told her there wasn't much they could do to stop this monster, but that didn't mean she wouldn't try. She lined up the sights on the curved shell covering the two sets of wings, wondering if the rounds would do anything besides piss the creature off. Even their RPGs probably wouldn't dent the armor, assuming they could take down the force field protecting the chitinous shell. Griffin, Taylor, and Malone were looking in her direction with their mirrored visors. Santiago, Staff Sergeant Corey, and 5 kid soldiers were all crouched behind her team at the edge of the tarmac next to the hangars. Everyone else was underground.
How the hell are we going?